session number 9253, reel 2.
Mr. Jack Dorgan, reel 2. You were describing your duties as a trapper boy down Ashington Mine.
Yes. Well, I started work down the pit as a trapper boy, which meant working 10 hours down the pit in those days. And I used to have to sit in the dark with a rope in my hand. And when anyone came along the roadway, I pulled the door, wooden door, open to let them through. Then when they were through, I had to get up and shut the door again. I didn't keep the door open very long. And it would be another trapper boy, another 100 yards or so further along, so that the air was trapped. While I opened my door, his door would be shut. And then when I closed my door, he would let open his to let whoever wanted to be through. That was the pattern of the roadway circulation. Well, I sat in the dark, as I said. My mother used to give me a candle, and I could light the candle only when it came to a meal time. Now, I would have some bread and dripping wrapped in the newspaper or in paper, and a tin water bottle. And the water bottle, not containing water, but cold, would have cooled tea. So I used to put the water bottle between two stones, put a lighted candle underneath, and warm it. I never could get it hot with a warm candle, but I remember I got a little warmth in the tea and my sandwiches.
Did you get lonely or bored?
No, I can't remember that. No. I've always been one, as far as I remember, to be able to sit back and think. I don't use the word think. I use the word, I forget now. Even today, after our midday meal, my daughter and her husband leaves me for 20 minutes to enjoy my one cigar I have every day. And I sit on, and I sit there and I meditate. That's the word I was seeking. And instead of thinking, I meditate. And I still do that now, meditate.
What was your next job after being trapper boy?
Trapper boy, yes. Well, now, I was a big lad. I've always sort of been a big lad, and I've always been a pushy sort of lad, able to look after myself. Even in the school days, there used to be in the Chopperton Colliery schoolyard, somebody had to be boss of the yard. And I remember my last 2 years at school, I was the boss of the schoolyard. For that job, I had to fight for it. The girls especially, because we shared the same schoolyard, the Chopperton Colliery School, and the girls and boys would all be in the schoolyard together, and the girls would always be pushing someone to try and take the job for me of boss of the schoolyard. So I had many, many fights. I've learned to look after myself, even in those school days. So that when I went to work down the pit, this job of sitting, opening trap door, and shutting it again. I only spent a few months on that job. And I got a job. My father had to go to the pit with me and ask the overman in charge of one of the pits to allow me to be a pony driver. I was one of the youngest pony drivers I ever had. But I was a big lad, a pushy lad, as I said. So I became a pony driver.
What did that involve?
Well, it meant, first of all, more money. More money. And, you see, in the coal mine in those days, you had the coal miner, a ewer, they called him. He filled his coal, when he got it loose, into the tub, an iron tub. And it travelled on a roadway, short length rails, only 3 foot long, each pair of rails, to a landing. Now, the bigger lads, 16, 17, 18, up to 20, they pulled with their pony, he was a pony driver, he would pull the tub away from where the man, the coal miner, filled his tub out to the landing. Then the younger boys, like I was at 14 and a half, was a pony driver. We would take four tubs with our pony. You got quite attached to your pony, you know. And you pulled your full tubs of coal out, a matter of about several hundred yards, maybe longer, to where the endless rope haulage roadways were. Because as you advance it working the coal mine, you have first of all the man that's filling the coal into tubs, and then the tubs are brought out to the landing, and the pony driver, like I was applying for and eventually got the job of a pony driver, the pony and I took four tubs away and brought it out to where the endless rope was. The endless rope was in big high roadways, and this endless rope was hauled along by engine power. And it took the empty tubs in from the coal mine shaft, into the workings, and brought, it was a double line, empty tubes going in, full tubes coming out. Well, my job as a pony driver was to take these full tubs of coal back to the endless rope haulage and take four empty tubs in. And then the bigger lads would be, they were called putters. They were pony drivers, the same as the younger boys. But we never went into the workings, the pony drivers, at 14, 15 and 16. Actually, you had to be around about 16 years of age before you came the putter. Now, once you started putting, as I did, because I was a big lad and I started early, and you're on a dental wage, you were paid by the number of full tubs you brought out from the coal face, which had been filled. And when you pulled a tube out, which was filled by the coal filler, you put an empty tube in place. So you took your empty tubs in, and on that empty tub, every putter, pony putter, would have his number on a tin disc. And then on the inside of the tub, there was a ring attached to the tub, and you attached with a piece of cord to the tub. and then the tin disc went through a hole in the tube outside. So outside, when the tube was full of coal, you could pick out the disc which was hanging out from the tube, and that was your number, and you got paid according to the number of tubs you brought out. It was all counted by the score. The score is 20. So you would say you got 2 score. That's 40, you see. 43. If you got 43 or 44 tubs out in a day, you were doing well. Now, I was a big lad, always was, and strong, willful a bit. And I did very well at this pony driving, putting job. But the coal tub, it's the size of an ordinary kitchen table and about 2'6" high on 4 wheels, everything iron. Your pony had a harness, a wooden harness and leather, and you could attach the limbers of the harness to the tub. Now that we sat behind the pony, between the pony and the tub. Well, you had to bend your back down so that your back didn't scrape the roof, because the roadways in the far workings where the man was filling his coal tub, there was just enough room for a tub to travel. Later, as advanced, those stone men would make roadways. But in the workings, there was just room for a tub to travel. And then there was a little siding where you put your empty tub, and you went forward and collected a full tub. Now, if you didn't keep your back down, your back scraped the roof. And the whole time I was a putter lad, the whole time, and I spent some years at the job, my spine on my back was just a succession of scars, scabs. I remember when I got married, my wife was astounded, and she looked at my back, at the scars it was on. You could count all the your vertebrae, your back is in sections, and every 2 or 3 inches there was a scar all the way down. They're gone now, at least I think they are. I can't see them, of course.
Did the money you got for this, you know, for your working, did this help alleviate your family's poverty?
Oh yes. Well, I was the oldest of, you see, our family was 5 of us in our family. The oldest was a girl, and when she left school, Bella, Isabella, she went off into service, what we called in place. You know, when you're in service for a family which had employed servants, it was called a place. Well, she went into service, and she always went up into North Northumberland, into the country districts. So we never, after she left school, we never saw her very, very little, because of, you know, there was no transport in those days. And whenever she came home, it would be sometime when the farm or the coal or the big house, she used to be work in the big houses, the big country houses. If they had some cart or trap, horse and trap, you know, going down towards where we lived, she would ask for a lift. So we didn't see her very often after she left school. Well, I was the youngest, she was a girl. There was the three lads of us. Me being the oldest.
So
as soon as I started work, of course, I started bringing money in. And when I was a putter lad, you know, on piecework, I was relying on the amount of tubs I got out, I got more money. And being a big, strong lad, I always made good, decent money among putters, because some putters, some lads, weren't as big and strong. In competition with me, they couldn't do as much as I did. So I helped the family finances a good deal.
So you didn't have quite such grinding poverty then?
But?
So it wasn't quite so bad?
No. As soon as I started work, and then old Tom, the second son, he started a couple of years after me, and then Nickel, 2 years again after me, after us two, well, we were well in. We got decent clothes. And I had a decent clothes, you know, till I left, many years after I left school. Oh, yeah. My mother used to make all, when I went to school, my mother made all my school. She would go to a jumble sale or go to some second-hand shop and buy an old suit in Newcastle, a man's suit, and she would strip the suit down, cut all the stitching out until it was just cloth, and then she would build me short pants. I never wore a jacket.
Going back to when you're mining, were you unionised at all at that time?
Yeah,
did you have a union?
Oh yes. I remember. But you see, we boys and youths didn't think much of unions. We never considered them. We had no use for that kind of thing. I mean, we weren't of the thinking age, you see. But the miners' unions always were strong, even in those far-off days. I remember once, speaking of unions, we putter lads, when I was getting away about 18 or 19, I was still putting, making a lot of money. Now then, you only worked in a certain district for a quarter. I mean, 3 months. That's a quarter. You see, every quarter, the working places would be put into one drum, and your names would put in another drum. We'd turn the wheels, and your name was pulled out. At the same time, a working place is pulled out, and that's where you work for the next 3 months. Now, some of these working places, you're able to make good money, but other places to work in were bad. Bad roof conditions, wet, and couldn't make very much money. And of course, all you did was groan and just accept it. And waited for the end of the quarter, end of the 3 months, and hoped for a better place the next 3 months. I was always lucky. I remember one time when I was putting, Rowley Conway, the overman, I was spare putting. I didn't have a place, a regular place to go and work when I was a putter lad. And Rowley Conway took a fancy to me. He was the overman. And we putters lads would go to the stables to collect the ponies. And he would have a board. And he had the names of the ponies on this board. And every pit, they always had a surplus number of putters in case a putter didn't turn up to do the regular job. Now, Rowley Conway took a fancy to me, I remember. And when it came, he always came to me, "Come on, Jack, take your pick." And you pointed to the board which pony you wanted, you see. Sometimes you knew where that pony worked. Sometimes you didn't. But Rowley Conway always put his thumb on the one that he wanted me to go to, where I'd make plenty of money. So I was rather favoured that way. And the other fellas had to just take what was left.
You were telling me something about the union, though, in Potterworth.
Then, at the end of the quarter, the end of the 3 months, one of the old customs was when you changed from at the end of the 3 months and you had to have the cables, that's the places and not new places to go to, the coal company gave every coal putter a shilling. Now, a shilling to us putters was really nothing, because we were making decent money, you know. But we always took that shilling. Now then, we putters, we had driver boys, as I was at one time, to take our full tubs away to the endless rope. They were the younger lads, 14, 15 and 16. So at the end of the quarter, we used to go to the colliery office and draw at the pay office our shillings. All the putter lads, big strong lads, you know, 16, 17, 18, 19 to 20 year olds, and we'd get that shilling. And then the driver lad would be there, and he just handed the shilling over to the driver lad. Well, at the end of one quarter, when we went on the usual Saturday morning for our shillings, we were told there was no shillings for us. The management had decided that the shillings, instead of being paid out on a Saturday morning, and that meant the pay department coming in on a Saturday morning and paying the shillings out. They said it would be on your paycheck at the end of the week. That didn't suit us. We wanted that shilling to give to our driver boy. Me, being one of the big lads and a bit cheeky, and Frank Bradley, he was another old putter, the two of us, we went in to see the manager, the colliery manager. Oh, he said, you'll have to accept it. I said, we won't. Frank Bradley couldn't speak going into the manager's office. He was afraid to talk, but I wasn't afraid. And I said to the manager, I says, it's no use talking like that. We've come here for that shilling, and we're going to have that shilling. I told the manager. And I says, the driver boys are here to collect that shilling, and we're not going to be disappointed. So get your men at work there and dish the shillings. He says, you'll have to wait half an hour. Well, we waited the half an hour because they had to send down to the bank to get the shillings. And then they paid the shillings out to us, and we handed the shilling over to the drivers, you see. And some of the drivers, you know, would get, he served two or three putters, you see, so perhaps he might get 3 shillings or 4 shillings, which was a lot of money to those driver boys, you see. And that's what happened. So, while I was in the manager's office, I says, why have you done this without telling us? He says, we informed the union. I says, you what? You informed the union that it was going to be changed. Oh, yes, we did. I says, we've never heard nothing about it. The unions at Ashton Colliery, we were just putter lads, you see. We never attended union meetings. So, they never bothered telling us, and we never knew. So, Frank Bradley and I, and about 6 or 8 of us, went to the next union meeting. First meeting ever I had been. And it was happened to be the annual meeting. So, we objected to every official that went up, and we were in the majority. And we could put any loud money we liked. Well, we didn't know anybody, so we let the old ones go. But I said to my fellow, I says, move me for the committee. So they put me on the committee because we were I had about 10 or 12, there was only about a dozen there at the meeting, you see, and I got on the union committee, but that didn't suit me at all, you know. You see, the unions in those days, they met once a week, supposedly, the unions, and they always adjourned at the end of the meeting. They never finished their business. They always adjourned the meeting to the next night. The union members, the union committee members, were generally the older men, you know, and they got paid for every meeting, committee meeting they went to. And at the end of the weekly meeting, they always adjourned it to another night, so they would get extra money. Well, that didn't suit me, you know. I went for the quarter. I went for that quarter, and then I resigned. And that was my only acquaintance with the unions.
Did you carry? You say you carried on putting. Were you still putting when the war broke out?
I was putting when the war broke out, and that was in 1914.
Hang on, before we come to that, I've got some other questions I'd like to ask. I believe you joined the Church Lads Brigade. This is going back now in 1907.
Yes, that's right.
Could you tell me something about what you did with the Church Lads Brigade?
Yes. Well, when we moved to Ashington, across the River Wansbeck, into Clyde Street, I was lost. I'd been used with Choppenden, Scotland Gate, Freehold Terrace, and, you know, it was in the country to me. It was in the country because opposite Freehold Terrace was just farmland, and there was a farm straight opposite our house owned by a family called Jordan. I wrote a story about that, Jordan's farm. Oh, well, that's by the way. I wrote stories about anything, you know. And I wrote about Jordan's farm. And I was only a schoolboy.
We were talking about how you joined the Church Lads Brigade.
Oh, Church Lads Brigade, yes. So when I went to Ashington, before I went to Ashington, in Choppenden, I only went to the Salvation Army. Now, in Choppenden, gatepost, there was no Church of England. It was away, a mile and a half away up towards Choppenden itself. But we lived in Gatepost, a little village. And in that village of Gatepost, there was the Methodist Church and the Salvation Army. To go to the Methodist Church, you had to be dressed as a schoolboy. Well, as I said, I never had the clothes to go anywhere like that. But the Salvation Army, they took anybody. Didn't matter how you were dressed. So every Sunday I went to the Salvation Army. And in that bookcase there, I've got my Bible for good attendance. A red-backed Bible. First Bible I ever got, and it's from the Salvation Army. I have great pride in belonging to the Salvation Army in those days. So that when I went to Ashington, there was no Salvation Army in that part.